brought to you by ConcordiaTheology.org, bringing you resources that support the vigorous life of the mind in service of the gospel of Christ.
Welcome to Lectionary Kickstart. We're sparking your thoughts for Sunday as you plan your sermon and teaching lesson. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordolo, here with Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker. They're both professors of homiletics here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. You can hear all about us in our introductory episode, but trust me, they are pretty good preachers. All right, let's get started. Peter, where are we in the church year?
We're talking about the text for All Saints Sunday, the one Sunday in the church year when we take time to think about the people who have died in the faith, who have gone before us, who serve as examples, who encourage us because they are living examples of people who trusted the promises of Jesus.
And what are the texts for this week, David?
The texts are Revelation 7, 1 John 3, Matthew 5, and Psalm 149.
As always, I ask each of you to tell me which text you would choose to preach about. To determine who goes first, I want to know your answer to this question. In your church, did you have some kind of community engagement with Halloween?
Not that I remember. I remember my mom getting in trouble for making pumpkin cupcakes in grade school.
Why?
It was a Lutheran grade school, and they said we didn't celebrate Halloween.
So no pumpkin muffins.
No pumpkin muffins. And my mom said to them, she said, well, I certainly can't put Luther's seal on a cupcake. So kind of got in trouble. But yeah, so that would be our non-engagement.
There you go.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's similar. Our grade school had a harvest festival because it was not a Halloween party. But there was probably pumpkins allowed. Pumpkin cupcakes would have been fine.
Well, David, you win in honor of your mom, Mrs. Schmidt.
Oh, there
thank
we go.
You for the pumpkin cupcakes and
thank
the Luther
you.
Seal that you didn't put on them.
Good. Thank you. I will be choosing Revelation 7. I mean, there's so many wonderful things in this passage. What are some of the wonderful things you see?
Everybody rejoicing, every tribe and nation and race, and they're singing and praising God, and Jesus is wiping away the tear from our eyes. Ultimate hope in everything.
I love it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And the vision of all of these nations before the throne, and it just kind of, and they're all singing, right? And they're all, at least it sounds like they have all the languages. So we kind of have this picture of a world united with various languages, which helps you really begin to appreciate that every culture, when the faith is brought into that culture, every culture has a voice to be heard in its praise of God and telling of the good news of salvation and you know, all telling it in different ways. It's just, I think it's a gorgeous, gorgeous vision there. Part of the beauty of the text is it's how enormous it is in terms of the peoples and the languages and the actions that are happening, this huge thing of incense and all of the prayers arising with the smoke of the incense. And you have all of these grand and glorious things that are happening. And then for me, the same thing that struck you is that last phrase, God will wipe away every tear from their eyes.
Amen.
I mean, so you're like looking
yes.
at, right, it's like of all of the things that John would see and feel that it was important to record, he records God wiping away a tear.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, if I'm in church and there's a hymn that hits me or there's something said in the sermon, I start to cry, I wipe away my tears, but I try not to let anybody see it. I mean, it's something small and it's pretty easy to hide. And you just kind of, you know, do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those who are listening, I put my finger by my eye.
Subtly wiping away a tear.
Right. But, you know, you do that and it's something so small. And yet John believes that it is something to be recorded with all of these other massive events. And to me, it's a beautiful testimony to God's care that looks at the smallest thing, the hair on your head, a sparrow falling to the ground. The smallest of things are seen by God. And so I guess for me, that portion of the text is a particular portion that I would focus on. And I'd probably need to tell people that there is a lot of stuff here, things that are you know, hard to understand, amazing, beautiful. They leave us in kind of a fearful awe of God. But the one thing I want to focus on today is particularly what happens in verse 16 and 17. So, Jessica, if you could read verse 16 and 17.
They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more. The sun shall not strike them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb in the midst of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to springs of living water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes.
Now, what I love about this is the way we have three things happening. We have a lamb who becomes a shepherd who wipes away tears. And I think for me, the dynamic that I would want to focus on is the fact that when a lamb becomes a shepherd, he wipes away tears. So the lamb is the one who has been crucified, right? That's the blood of the lamb. So the lamb is the one who has been crucified. So when the one who has been crucified becomes your shepherd, his desire is to wipe away tears. Because we have a shepherd who knows what it's like to be a lamb. And I think I would probably do on All Saints Day, I would do a multiple story sermon that takes that principle that when a lamb becomes a shepherd, he wipes away tears. And I would kind of unfold how God does that for us and how we as saints now do it for others. And so I would just think about different vocations. I would think about when an orphaned girl becomes a mother, she wipes away tears. When a parishioner becomes a pastor, he wipes away tears. And you just fill in the blank, right? You know, when a cruddy baseball player becomes a coach, he wipes away tears. That's your experience as the lamb, your experience as an orphan, your experience as a bad baseball player, your experience of whatever it is in this world. When that experience is brought to a vocation of supervision or watching over people like that, you understand what it is to be that way, and you understand what to do. And so I would just look for stories where I see that dynamic happening and kind of attribute that to the way in which God works in our life. You're just looking at me, Peter. No, I'm kind of worried.
I've got so many thoughts going through my mind that this spurs on that is so helpful, because that's a way to hold on to those last couple lines in a way that goes from Jesus and his death to his provision and his love to our situation. I was thinking about that moment when you're talking to somebody, you know, and the conversation's starting to get serious and their eyes start to swell up.
Right.
You know, there's always that moment where you can tell, and it's almost like, oh no, here we're going there.
Right.
And then you see the eyes swell up with water, and then the first tear come down. I'd almost wonder if, you know, that kind of image. I mean, you said multiple story approach.
But I mean, that image, right? Yeah. And that, I mean, perhaps even that while the shepherd is wiping away a tear is coming out of his eye, right? I mean, right? Because you understand, there's that empathy. So when a person who was a non-Christian in late adulthood becomes a Christian, they wipe away tears. They understand what it's like to not be part of the faith. And I mean, it's just that whole way in which God uses these moments in our life to carve out our hearts so we have places of sensitivity, right? So that we can now be pictures of him. You know, what he's going to do on the last day, we get the joy and the privilege of doing ahead of time. Right?
Well, this kind of picks up on, we've had readings this fall from Hebrews. You know, the high priest is able to sympathize with
Correct.
Us in our weaknesses. And then Paul talks about how, you know, we comfort those with the comfort that we have received.
Right.
In 2 Corinthians. And so you've got all these different connections you could explore. But that phrase is really nice, that when the lamb becomes a shepherd, he can wipe away tears.
That's right.
Really nice.
Yeah, that's why I went into youth ministry.
Really?
When a really awkward middle school girl becomes a youth leader,
isn't that
I try to wipe away tears from their eyes.
Yeah, because you have a heart for those people, right? Yep. So that's that would be, I mean, it's a simple sermon. It's a real simple teaching. You start by kind of pointing that out, anchoring it in God, so that you're telling the story of salvation that way. And then you're moving into, we're celebrating All Saints. And
I can imagine this being a really helpful sermon, especially for a congregation if they've in the last year lost members who were beloved or maybe who were really young. You know, sometimes you have this commemoration of the faithful departed and not many people know the names because
right.
they were maybe shut-ins. But sometimes, you know, just the mention of one of the names in that list will bring everybody to watery eyes. And so this kind of approach could be really helpful to a congregation that's still maybe reeling from the loss of a loved one.
I remember a church that I was preaching there, and I came in the night before just to see the sanctuary space before I preached. And they had grapevines. This was out in the countryside. They had grapevines that started at the altar and kind of were up along the roof line, you know, the top, the ceiling line, and went all the way back into the back of the church. And they had names on pieces of paper that were hanging. And there were ones that were in white for the people who had passed away and ones that were in red for the people who were living, still living in the members of the congregation.
Oh, wow.
And it was kind of a living memory of, you know, I am the vine, you are the branches, and seeing the people.
That's
there,
great. So. I was talking about this text this week with Dr. Hainer, and he reminded me that John is the only gospel that says that on Palm Sunday there were palm branches. The other gospel writers just said they were branches. And then he talks about palm branches here, and he was like, John saw this before.
That's cool.
When Jesus came into town, there were palm branches, and now they're there.
Well, think about that. When a disciple becomes a teacher.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right. When a person in counseling becomes a counselor, right, you just kind of keep, you could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
Thanks, David. What about you, Peter? What would you preach on?
Well, I too was looking at Revelation 7.
Wonderful.
Because, well, for a couple reasons. One is, for some reason, I never tired of preaching All Saints.
Usually when it's a celebration, we're like, oh, these are so difficult.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I thought you were going to come in and say, All Saints Day is so hard.
But I was thinking about why that is. And I think All Saints at least never got old for me, because on All Saints, we highlight something we don't highlight the rest of the year. You know, Reformation, you better be preaching the gospel every Sunday.
Correct.
And so it shouldn't be anything really all that significant or new, because we're all here because of that. But All Saints is really the one Sunday that I can think of, at least, that's really focused on our connection to people that we don't even know. And so the commemoration of the faithful departed, which is generally part of most All Saints celebrations, I found myself often drawn to highlight that in some way. And you can't find a better way to highlight that, it seems, in some ways than this text from Revelation 7. And so it's interesting, your take on Revelation 7 is focusing on kind of the intimacy and the personal touch and the love and the care of our Savior for individuals
right.
who are crying. I'm thinking more the multitude and the masses and the big picture. And so I was thinking about, you know, in a way you could get at that with any of the kind of the corporate nature of the Christian life is clear in all these texts. You know, in 1 John 3, we're children of God, and so we're kind of has this big family image. In the Matthew text, it's blessed are they. It's this kind of the people who are blessed who fall into these categories. The Psalm is it's explicit in that Psalm 149. It's a song of the assembly. And so there's any one of these texts, but this, where there's this multitude, you get the 12,000 from each tribe, of course, the connection of the people of God in the Old Testament. But then this multitude that no one can count, the scope you mentioned at the beginning of yours, Dave, the scope of this sea of people, you can't see the end of it.
It's amazing.
It's such an image. And so the image that I want to highlight is maybe if you would read, Jessica, verses 9 and 10.
After this, I looked, and behold, a great multitude that no one could number, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes, with palm branches in their hands. and crying out with a loud voice, "Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb."
So I was reminded when I was reading this text of a year. So the congregation I served in Minnesota was pretty small. I mean, we had, I think, 125 members on the books, maybe even closer to 100 when I first got there, and 70, 80 people in worship. But it was one of my first years there. We had 17 baptisms in one year.
Wow.
And it was really, really exciting for the congregation. Wow. I mean, it was like every week it seemed like we were baptizing somebody else, and it was really exciting. But I remember thinking there was that year where it was between All Saints Day and All Saints Day, we had all those baptisms. And of course, you think about white robes washed in the blood of the Lamb. We'd been doing so much white robe washing language of baptism all year that we decided that year to not only commemorate the faithful departed, but also commemorate and recognize those who had just been baptized within the last year.
That's kind of nice. And I like that idea.
So what we did is we had baptismal banners. You know, we had kind of this banner where you could connect the names who'd been baptized. We had that kind of in the chancel. And so it was a time to think about kind of one way you could do this is to think about the tribulation.
Right.
And the tribulation that we experienced, the reason for the tears, from the perspective of those who are at rest and from the perspective of those who are just beginning.
Right.
Their walk through this veil of tears. And so I think you could, in a sermon, reflect on, kind of have it be a baptismal remembrance as well as a remembrance of the faithful departed, and think about what is coming for the baptized, that for some of these newly baptized, what's coming is going to be hard, and a chance to name the difficulties that you and others in your congregation are experiencing. And you don't sugarcoat this at all. It's a tribulation.
You know, I still remember the time in my ministry when that was like blatantly in my face. I had a member who had just had a baby and went over to her house to visit her. And she was involved in an argument with the neighbor next door who had just had True Green spray their lawn. And she didn't want any of those chemicals around her house because she had just had a baby. So very, very concerned about the health of her child, right? Mm-hmm. And I still remember the day I was baptizing the baby, and the church I was in had all of these apostles on the windows surrounding the nave, and above them hung a shield which had the emblem of their death on it.
Mm.
And I was sitting there thinking, here's this woman who, as a mother, is very concerned about pesticide on lawns, but she's doing a very dangerous thing, bringing her child into a community that this baptism has led to, you know, martyrdom for many of the followers. It was just like right there in my face.
Well,
right?
And it's a different view of baptism than sometimes we portray. Baptism has these wonderful promises of life, forgiveness, salvation, community, and yet another promise of baptism is if they hated me, they will hate you. And the struggle that as Christians we face in this world when we're faithful, not just because we're part of a fallen world,
right?
But there's tribulation, and
we're being brought into a persecuted church, right? Yeah,
and it doesn't have to be kind of you don't have to overplay the persecution card.
No,
recognize that these people are there's going to be tribulation,
and yet there is jubilation at the end.
Well, and this is where so one perspective is the children who then are or even adults. I can't remember if there were some adults in that group. I think there was an adult. I think there's a family as part of that 17. Mm-hmm. That this is a challenge, and yet the promise that is theirs even in baptism is the promise that those who are faithfully departed are experiencing at least in part as they wait for the Lord to return.
Yeah, and they finish the race.
Yeah, they're
done with their labors, and and I think that's the beautiful part, right? Is that you've got kind of this baptism, this initiation into this race, and then you have the stories of these people who have died, which, you know, are probably filled with moments of suffering, right?
Well, see, this is where I think you could, as a pastor, you could help the baptized who are living and the newly baptized be prepared for the struggles of the Christian life by recalling even some of the struggles that faithful departed have experienced. And so this might be a time to draw stories from the people who suffered through difficulty, who had or experienced some sort of persecution for their faith, who remained faithful even when it was tough. But I think giving them kind of this dual lens of kind of from the beginning and from the end to help them live here in the middle.
And I think there's something beautiful about that, because it helps us realize there's a reason we don't forget the departed.
Hmm.
There's a reason we remember them.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that they you know, life has changed for them. It has not ended.
Right. Right. He's the God of the living, not the dead.
Right. Life has changed for them, and we remember that, and their lives are still a witness, a living witness to us.
So you might go this route, what you just said, if the congregation, if the list that you read in the commemoration list is people that nobody knows.
Right.
Because then you might say, let me tell you about some of these. Maybe you never met these people, but let me tell you about them. We remember them for this very reason.
Right.
Because they are embodying kind of the life that has lived according to the promise that we've received here in baptism.
Yeah.
So I think you could make this kind of an emphasis on baptism, a time to remember these faithful departed for the sake of the faithful living that we experience here today in this continued Valley of Tears.
I love it.
So I've always had a strong connection between baptism and All Saints since my daughter was born at the end of October, and she was baptized on All Saints Sunday. And so the theme that I just had in mind automatically at that moment, and from that moment on, was these people that you don't always know their name who are listed on All Saints Sunday, and this little girl that nobody had even met yet who was baptized on this same very day. And so the connections there between All Saints and baptism are personally very strong. And I also think they're textually and they're theologically and in every other way. It really is a nice time to do the two together. Let's add something, because on All Saints Sunday, one of my favorite hymns is Behold the Host.
Oh, that
arrayed
one.
In white. I also love For All the Saints.
Okay.
I love that one. I love the distant tune.
You were just
going
to get into a fight.
No.
Because that's your favorite.
I love For All the Saints. But okay.
These are like two of my favorite hymns, and I love For All the Saints. But I also love Behold a Host Arrayed in White. And I specifically love the language in verse 3 of that hymn.
What's the melody to that?
Well, I don't want to sing it.
Can you hum it?
Do yourself a favor and Google Behold a Host Arrayed in White, Koine, Koine. And you'll go to YouTube, and it's an acoustic guitar version of Behold a Host Arrayed in White. And it is so beautiful.
Nice.
And the language that version of the hymn uses is slightly different than some hymnal versions. But just listen to this language here. It's in the third verse. O blessed legions resting there, you are now safe and blessed forever. So praise the Lord who with his word sustained you on the way. I love that phrase, with his word sustained you on the way. And what you're doing, I think, in this sermon is you're sustaining your hearers on this way through this tribulated, trial-filled life. But the Behold a Host, that really picks up on the Revelation 7. This host already.
Right. Oh, definitely.
I love All Saints Sunday.
Thanks, Peter. That's all for today. We have free resources to guide your next step in planning at concordiatheology.org. While you're there, you'll also find episodes of our other podcast, Tangible Theology Learned and Lived. Twice a month, I host conversations with Concordia Seminary faculty, and we talk about the ways in which their understanding of God and faith is real in their everyday lives. The show is for anyone who wants to deepen their theology. This is for your congregation. Tell them about it. It's Tangible Theology Learned and Lived. You can find more episodes of Lectionary Kickstart and Tangible on any of the major podcast apps. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordolo. Join us next week here at Lectionary Kickstart when Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Navsker will spark your thoughts for next Sunday.
Well, I certainly can't put Luther's seal on a cupcake.